Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 522 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. That means that we're just 97 episodes away now from episode 619, the quest to get Rey Mysterio on. If you are new to the podcast, that is my goal for 2026, to get Rey Mysterio to be the guest for episode 619. For this week, though, we got to settle once again for Chad Smart, my friend and colleague, professional wrestling geek and guru, 20 plus years. Chad, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing good. No, I'm just, I'm sorry for anybody watching the video version. I don't know. I have bad, you know, chroma key. So whatever is popping up behind my shoulder right now, you can just count. And however, whoever comes closest to however many times it pops in and out, you really need to get a life and just.
It matches your shirt. So it kind of looks like
there's a
broke going on there.
Yeah, I figure it's just the chair back, but I don't know. Technology, you know, we're old. We don't know how this works. So
very, very true. Very, very.
I don't know if you're going to bring this up. I'm going to go ahead and bring it up now to get the conversation flowing. But, you know, we're recording this November 17th. And 2 days ago was the famous, or the infamous, which means more than famous.
Yeah.
Jake Paul, Mike Tyson boxing match.
Yes.
Air quoting.
Air quote.
You started watching it, but then the issues, the lag and buffering issues.
We had the lag. My son actually, though, he was watching it on something else and he actually saw it. So, but yeah, we tried watching it and it froze for the last time. And I'm, because at first I got on there and was watching it and wasn't having any issues. And I saw everybody on social media complaining about it. And I'm like, well, I don't know what the issue is because we're fine. And then probably 5 minutes later, it just froze, and then I'd restart it. It'd play for like 3 minutes and then freeze again. So
when I turned it on during the prelim fights, I had no problem. And then we watched something else, came back right as the Tyson fight was getting ready to start. And I had to fast forward because I turned it on and it was like the same people were starting to fight that. And I'm like, shouldn't this match be over with?
Yeah.
So we fast forward, got up, and then it started buffering. And then in the third round of the fight, I think we missed like half that round due to the buffering. So my question to you is Monday Night Raw is going to be a weekly show starting in January on Netflix. And granted, I would say probably the fight had more people watching than a weekly episode of Monday Night Raw will, and I don't know all the technical specs of, you know, how more people will affect the bandwidth and whatnot, but do you think this should be a cause of concern for WWE, you know, going forward? Or do you think, I know they have an NFL game coming up in December on Netflix as well. Do you think they'll have things worked out before January?
I think that heads started rolling that night. And I think that if there's not a plan and an update and the issue's fixed, or at least in the process of being fixed by Monday morning, I would be very surprised just because of the, you know, I was looking at it from a marketing perspective of, you know, all of these pissed off people now, because I don't know that anybody necessarily subscribe to Netflix just to watch that fight, but the people that are there and your loyal customer base, you know, you're going to have to do something to make this right for them. So I think the issues will be resolved, but I do think, yes, it did. That's the first thing I thought was, is what's going to happen. And I didn't figure there was going to be the same amount of people trying to watch a Raw as to this fight. But, you know, I don't know. Are they going to, I don't know when Netflix is going to get the premium live events either. So then you got to take into account, you know, Royal Rumble and WrestleMania and all those events that would draw more eyes, I would think. But hopefully they get it all fixed because, you know, obviously Peacock and Disney, well, I don't know so much about Disney Plus, but who else streams live? I know Peacock does and Prime and you know,
Paramount
NFL and whatnot. So what'd you say?
Paramount Plus does.
Paramount. Oh yeah. Paramount Plus. So, I mean, it's obviously possible. And, but again, like you said, I don't know how many people tried watching that night.
Yeah. And I don't, without knowing the ins and outs of their divisions, Peacock, Paramount Plus are all newer platforms, whereas Netflix, you know, that's the OG when it comes to streaming, if you will. And I know Hulu, because I deal with Hulu in my professional life working, have been told, you know, it's an outdated system. And that's why you can only have two audio stream or two. Yeah. So like if something is in English, you know, it might be also in Spanish, but you can't have, because I deal with localizing shows where we do 20 different languages, only one other language can go up on Hulu because of the limitations set by the platform. So I don't know if Netflix is dealing with
a
similar situation. But, you know, I would think that, like you said, if they're going to go into live events more often, that they would be working on that. And, you know, the first Raw, it's January 6th. If it doesn't go well, are we going to get version 2?
We might. We might. You might see it. You might see it. Something else kind of in the news that I noticed over the weekend, and I had read about it, and I think we may have talked about this offline, but I don't remember. But I want to get your take on it, is Dustin Rhodes, or Dustin Rhodes, apparently is finished with AEW, or is his contract has expired. I don't know if he's done, because the last I had seen, he was
part of the double champ
and the tag team champions with Ring of Honor. So is he still a champion in those?
As far as I know, I mean, I guess Ring of Honor is still a thing, but I don't watch.
Well, he had posted on Twitter, you know, some stuff that made me think, you know, he may be done or he may be renegotiated. I don't know. I don't know if Tony Khan brings him back, but what, you know, and again, I think that this generation of wrestlers, and when I say this generation, meaning the Attitude Era generation of wrestlers that are still active, Chris Jericho and Dustin, Jeff Jarrett, you know, we're seeing these guys, they're not maybe as active, but they're still wrestling. Sting, of course, was 63 or 64 when he finally retired.
Daddy ass, 72.
But, you know, there is, you know, back in the day, and I don't know why I pick on Morales, but I do, you know, I say, you know, I don't know that I would have wanted to see a 60-year-old Pedro Morales running around the ring still. I think in his 40s, he seemed old when he was back.
Say, did you want to see a 30-year-old Pedro Morales?
So my question is, you know, Dustin can obviously still go. Would you rather see him go to AEW or, you know, stay with AEW, continue on with Ring of Honor? Because it seems like they were kind of moving him in that direction, or you know, I think a lot of people are speculating, you know, they were doing this back when the story was still going on for Cody that go to WWE, be in his corner at WrestleMania, fill those blanks. But we also talked about that star power, and is a 55-year-old Dustin Rhodes going to make a difference in front of the camera in WWE, or do they bring him in as an NXT trainer for that brand?
Yeah, I don't think Dustin would be a full-time, you know, performer at this point. And And part of that is, you know, I think we've discussed on the show before, it if he goes back to WWE, the other factor is Dustin Rhodes was never really popular.
Yes.
Gold Dust was popular. Now, do you want to see a 55-year-old Gold Dust, or does that get, you know, kind of creepy and odd, depending on, you know.
In 2024, yeah, I mean, they would not be able to do the same things they did 30 years ago with the
people
that they would do today. So,
you know, and I, you know, I all credit to Dustin for still being able to go out and do, but I don't, you know, personally, you know, we were talking about before you started recording about booking for ourselves other than booking for the masses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, personally, I don't. I could see, I don't want to say that Dustin would be in the Barry Horowitz camp of, you know, enhancement talent, but I'm trying to think of some, you know, I think he would be kind of a Tito Santana at this point where you can go, you know, give him a few wins occasionally, but he's never going to win a feud.
Right.
That makes sense.
Well, and then, you know, we kind of talked about it with the Goldberg episode too, you know, at what point do the legends, and I'm, you know, I'm not doing air quotes, I am being sincere when I say that, because I do think that guys like, you know, even though Dustin maybe was never the main event guy or the top dog or whatever, but he is a legend in wrestling, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, at what point do they, A, call it a day, and B, you know, what is the expectation for them as far as winning? Because at some point, I also think you kind of jeopardize that legacy. You know, I've seen it said before that, you know, and this is probably not a good analogy, but I'm going to use it. And I'm paraphrasing it, but it's the meme of Randy Savage, the Ultimate Warrior, Rowdy Piper, and Hulk Hogan. And it basically is talking about how those four, three of those four,
died
instead of. What were you going to say?
I was going to say kept Columbia's gross national product up in the 90s, in the 80s.
No, but they basically, they died, you know, the hero, and then Hogan lived on to be the villain. You know, and it's also kind of a commentary on real life too. So anyway, I'm saying that to say, you know, at what point, I don't think we needed 72-year-old Ric Flair getting in the ring for that last match. We were both content, I think, with his final run in WWE. And even then, in 2008, it seemed like maybe he could have called it quits, you know, when WCW folded originally in 2001. I, you know, it becomes a point of like, where are you in, like the fight that you brought up with Mike Tyson? You know, I still am in the camp that that fight was predetermined. It was sports entertainment. I don't think that they really, but maybe they did. I don't know. I didn't watch it. So but just the lead up to it felt very WWE-ish to me with the slap and all, you know, the shit talk that they did. I could be wrong.
So do you want to see Logan Paul versus Ric Flair?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. But, you know, I mean, I think Mike Tyson, even at 57, I mean, he's still a brick house, and I thought he would just go out there and pretty much eat Jake Paul's lunch. But obviously Jake Paul's been, you know, my son was like, well, he's been really training, and, you know, maybe it was legit. I don't know. But I guess I'm saying all that to say is, you know, has Tyson's legacy, much like if someone like Dustin or, you know, continues to go in there and wrestle. Mm-hmm. And I know wrestling is different in that you're helping to make someone else look better usually, but at what point do you call it quits so your legacy then isn't hampered in making everyone else look better? And I think Flair was kind of going down that road in WWE towards the end.
Well, and I would go with Mick Foley as well, where, mm-hmm. you know, he went out on his own terms and then kept coming back. And, you know, more times than not, he was on the losing end. Mm-hmm. And part of it was because he was trying to help make guys look good or, you know, build up that next generation. But it's like, if you keep coming back and keep getting beat, then the people that are beating you aren't beating the legend Mick Foley, you know. They're beating the old man,
right?
So it is a, you know, it's a definitely a balancing act to do so. As far as Tyson, I don't think, I mean, if people had actually seen the fight, maybe it would have tarnish his legacy. But since with all the buffering issues, very few people saw it. I don't think it, you know, I'm with you. I don't know if the fight was legit or maybe it was legit, but they took it easy. And you know, I mean, we're sitting watching this that you always wonder why they don't hit more in boxing.
Yeah.
And I, being inspired by Mike Tyson, I pulled out my VR headset yesterday and I have a boxing game that I haven't played in like 6 months. quickly found out how out of shape I am. but, you know, I just go in and start throwing a flurry of punches and one out of 10 lands because, you know, so boxing is more strategic than one would think. But I think Tyson got a couple of good shots in, but he wasn't throwing punches the way that he did, you know, back in his prime. And it was it because he couldn't, or because Jake Paul is that good, or is it because he knew, you know, he had to last 16 minutes in the ring and and so he was pacing himself. I don't know. But yeah, to your point, I definitely think, you know, like we said, Flair, I think tarnished his reputation with how long he's kept wrestling. And, you know, other also with being Ric Flair, you know, hasn't helped things.
Right.
But, you know, and I think it's just a thing with wrestlers that they don't know, you know, a lot of them don't know when to stop because what do you do afterwards?
It's
either wrestling or becoming a car salesman.
And you know, we've talked before about, you know, the commentary jobs or, you know, the other things, but there's just not obviously a roster of 50 wrestlers and you know, six commentators. It's obviously harder to fit into that category. So would it make sense to insert Dustin in WWE with an on-camera role with Cody at some point, do you think? Or do you think that he just kind of quietly goes into a, you know, trainer? Because, you know, Dustin was, you know, obviously polling his crowd and the people that follow him on X and asking, you know, do you still want to see me perform? And, you know, people for the most part are saying, yeah, keep going. We want to go you to go to WWE or stay in AEW, whatever the answer is. But I almost feel like the ship has sailed, but I don't know what is next for Cody. Are they going to continue on with him being kind of a surrogate with the bloodline, or is it going to be, you know, because again, Cody still feels kind of like the secondary act. And I don't know that bringing Dustin in is going to change anything with that, because then if you have Cody and Dustin team up to feud with the Usos or The Rock and Roman Reigns or whomever it is, it still feels less than, in my opinion, at least with the way the story has gone so far.
Yeah, I would agree. I think if Dustin does go back to WWE, it should probably be more as a trainer and maybe some appearances in NXT. I don't think the storyline, you know, again, had he come in prior to WrestleMania 39 or 40, sure, putting him in that storyline. But like I said, that storyline is now moved on and Cody is, you know, we've discussed it before. It's just like Cody is, it seems to be like on the Cody Island. And I think I'm trying to remember if that's something that the IWC has created, but it's like, well, when he was in AEW, you know, people would get sucked into the Cody verse. Like they now get sucked into the Jericho verse where it doesn't really help anybody. It's just kind of like its own standalone thing. And that's where Cody is right now as champion. Like you said, he's not necessarily, he doesn't come off as being the focal point or, you know, if the champ's not there when, you know, and as of this recording, he doesn't have a match at Survivor Series. And I've seen rumors that he's not going to be on the Survivor Series card, which you would think your champion would be on one of your major four shows. But where does he fit in right now? And
is that War Games match final? I mean, is it going to be Seth and Bronson Reed or... Because then I saw speculation that it's going to be Cody and The Rock on the opposing teams?
I know Raw this week is taped, and okay. I haven't read the spoilers, but based on, and last week on Raw, you know, Seth turned them down. But then on SmackDown, Bronson Reed got involved. So I'm going to guess that he's going to be in there. And because he's there, I'm going to guess Seth will join up, because you got to keep that feud going. But why they brought in, you know, Bronson Reed and whoever to be named to make it 5-on-5, I think they could have kept it 4-on-4. I think other war games in WWE have been 4-on-4. It doesn't really make...
I agree. I feel like, you know, because, you know, back in the day, and we'll talk more about this on next week's episode, and if you haven't submitted a Survivor, which we've gotten a lot of really good suggestions, so if you haven't suggested anyone for Survivor Series yet, do that this week, because we're going to draw those probably midweek to record the podcast for next week's Survivor Series show. But, you know, I always enjoyed the traditional 5-on-5, you know, teams of five strive to survive. And then they evolved to the 4-on-4. And it always felt like there were, not in every match, but it felt like there was a reason for them to all kind of be together. Or, you know, at least the opposing. And I guess to me, though, it's kind of like you said, the four principles on both sides, it makes sense. And then throwing in another feud doesn't, you know, as Hogan would say, doesn't work for me, brother. But I could see, and I know you probably cringe at this, I would rather it be Cody and The Rock filling those other two spots than Bronson Reed and Seth Rollins. Nothing against Bronson Reed. To me, he just hasn't hit yet. And
I'm coming around on him. I'm still not fully on board, but at least they've done something with him in the last 2 months to make him.
I'm kind of still in that phase. And again, I don't watch on a weekly basis to see what is all, you know, I see what's going on social media, and then if you send me a clip or whatever. Hopefully though, Netflix will stream well, and I'll be able to watch on a more consistent basis. But it's interesting. It's going to be interesting, to say the least. And by next week, hopefully by the time we record, we'll have a more solid look at what the Survivor Series layout is going to be.
You know, and in that same regard, kind of changing subjects a little bit, apparently there's going to be a women's Survivor Series or War Games match as well.
Yeah.
And that one seems very just thrown together to...
Very hodgepodge, yeah.
And, you know, they did this with Hell in a Cell, where they would, when it was a pay-per-view, there would be multiple Hell in the Cell match. I don't think you need a women's War Games match on this show. You know, I mean, if there was a feud that was going on that warranted it, sure, fine. But just to throw it on there because it's War Games, I think it dilutes the overall War Games gimmick when you're just doing it for the sake of doing it, much like all other gimmick matches.
Have they done, do you recall, it seems like the last few years they've switched to the War Games format. Have they done, because with War Games, it's winner take all. It's not elimination like Survivor
Series.
Do they do any Survivor Series style matches? I don't think they did in the past with the War Games. You know what I'm saying? So like the women's match could have just been a traditional 5-on-5
elimination. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say they maybe had one traditional match just to throw it a bone to keep it on there, but I don't know. I mean, like I said, I barely remember what happened on last month's PLE, much less last year. I mean, I was watching NXT TakeOver War Games 2 the other day, which I was in attendance for, and I like, oh, I totally don't remember this match. Don't remember this match. Don't remember these guys were in the match. All I remember is Adam Cole, baby. That son of a bitch.
Well, you know, since we're talking about Survivor Series, it is November. Yeah. To me, it's always, you know, I like reminiscing and thinking about Survivor Series. And I went back because I thought about this last night before I texted you to talk about a topic for this week. And I checked, and I know this is probably the most talked about event in wrestling history on other podcasts and other formats. And This is going to be a different take on the Montreal Screwjob, but we had never talked about this before. I'd never talked about it on the podcast. I've never had a guest that we've talked about it, you know, because I can search the archives. And Bret Hart's only been a topic or a subject like once or twice. So I wanted to talk to you about the Screwjob. It's 27 years ago. We are a few weeks removed from the actual anniversary. I can remember watching it on Scramble Vision because we didn't have paper, you know, I didn't order that paper. We had just moved to Alabama. Mm-hmm. I was making $13,000 a year as a TV reporter and was not in the budget to order WWF pay-per-views at the time. So I'd watch it on Scramble Vision and then sat on AOL chat and talked about what had happened. So did you watch the show? Did you think it was, you know, what was happening was real? Because, you know, obviously we knew that Bret was going to be leaving. We had read that online. But what were your initial takeaways from it?
No, I remember I was in Florida visiting family. And I was, you know, this was early-ish in the internet online thing. And I remember like constantly going whenever we weren't doing anything, I'd go online. And then during the Survivor Series, there was a site that I used to watch. I believe it was Mikasa Wrestling or something like that. It's where I first learned the term kayfabe and getting behind the scenes news, but they would do like a, you know, live report of the show. And so I was keeping up with what was going on during the show without watching it. And then, yeah, when the screw job happened and reading about it, and I was like very confused and shocked and dismayed.
Do you think it was, because there are still people that aren't convinced that it was real, because they were doing the documentary for Wrestling with the Shadows, or I think that's what it was called.
Wrestling with Shadows, yeah.
So, you know, like the convenience of everything kind of being documented and then, you know, because typically speaking, we would have never seen or heard about this, but then there were all these little things that were out there. So where do you land on it? Was it real or not?
You know, I believe in Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster because it makes life interesting. So I think it was a work.
You do think it was a work?
I do think it was a work. I think now, you know, was it fully a work or were there some elements of shoot in there? Maybe, but I think Bret knew something was going to happen because, you know, as I think they even mentioned it in the Wrestling with Shadows, or maybe it's come out later, where it's like, you know, he was apparently told by other wrestlers, you know, don't put yourself into a compromised position of like, of being, you know, in the sharpshooter, you know, or letting a move be put on him. And I think Bret would have been smart enough to, especially with Vince at ringside, you know, so I don't know. And, you know, hopefully, you know, before Vince, Sean, Bret all pass on, maybe somebody will come out and say for sure, or maybe it'll just be like the Kennedy assassination and we'll just keep making up new theories every other year.
Well, and I wanted to do a couple of different theories here to talk about, because I haven't heard much of, you know, it's usually getting different wrestlers' perspectives or hearing different stories about what they believe and don't believe. So this is where I kind of want to get into our own theories and throw out two different scenarios. A is the screw job does not happen. So Bret goes in there, wrestles the match, still leaves for WCW, but loses the belt the next night on Raw, like he originally laid out and wanted to do. He didn't want to lose it in his hometown.
Yeah.
I think, let me backtrack for a second. If it is all real, which I believe probably is, I think that Vince did the right thing. In the time and in the moment that he was in, and after seeing Medusa go to WCW and drop the belt in the trash, you know, and I know it's wrestling, I know it's a prop and all, you know, but still, the things that kind of, I think those things were causing, I don't necessarily think damage, but they were causing, you know, things to happen within the company. So I agree with the outcome of the screw job. But let's just, for argument's sake, say that he doesn't do the screw job and Brett peacefully goes to WCW, drops the belt to Sean or whomever. I think wrestling, I think the screw job set into motion the boom period for WWE's Attitude Era, for them to go public and everyone become very wealthy in the process, because I do believe, and say what you want about him as a human being, but without that Vince McMahon heel turn, I don't know WWE gets the because I don't know that they had anyone for Austin. Mm-hmm. You know, no. Later for Austin to win the championship, I don't think they had anyone in the wings to be that top guy to go head to head with Austin.
No, I agree 100%. And the creation of the Mr. McMahon character is, you know, sadly, it's also kind of been diluted over the last 27 years of being the crutch that promotions fall. And knock on wood, we'll give it credit to Tony Khan, hasn't done that yet. I say yet, you know, but without him, and you know, I think because it also made for the perfect story with Austin of being the, you know, McMahon wanting the polished champion and Austin being more the everyman scenario. So, you know, I think Austin would have still feuded with people that he feuded with, Triple H, Undertaker, Kane, but the story itself was about the company more than the title.
Yeah.
And so, and I think getting Brett out of WWF was actually a kind of a good thing as well. Mm-hmm. And because if Brett had stayed there, again, does then Austin feud with Brett more? You know, who does Brett feud with after?
Right.
You know, it's in that butterfly effect of, you know, one wing flapping changes everything. It's kind of like if the curtain call hadn't happened and Austin didn't win King of the Ring, Austin 316 never gets born. How does that change the trajectory?
Right.
And, you know, and
Jake, and the so, Snake, if he hadn't come back, if he hadn't turned, you know, there's so many factors.
Yeah. And so if, even if, you know, if, so if that doesn't happen, and then the screw job doesn't, even if the screw job happens the way it did, you don't have the Austin, you know, momentum that you have going in. So it was just the perfect storm of,
yeah.
And, you know, and going off on a tangent here, but I think that's when fans look back and be like, oh, we want, you know, this era back, or we want this time back. Like I said, it's, I don't think it was anything that wrestling did specifically to get that boom period. It's just the perfect combination of events happening and, you know, and then you come together and then it works out. But I don't think it's something you can plan.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in the other scenario, you know, like we said, say Brett isn't going to WCW and stays with the WWF. He retains the title against Shawn. And then, like you said, do we get Austin Brett at WrestleMania 14 then that year? And is Tyson still involved with it? And you know, there again, there are so many little factors in there that, you know, the other real big thing I wanted to talk about is, what if we reverse roles of Brett and Sean, and Sean's the one that is going to WCW? Does Vince still pull the screw job off against Sean? And then what does that look like? You know, Sean going to WCW, to me would have been more impactful than Brett, because I do think WCW completely bungled the Bret Hart jump.
No, I agree. And, you know, I think going back to, you know, the whole, was it a work or was it real? Because we had access to information that we normally wouldn't. You know, there was the deal that Brett had signed when he'd come back after the WrestleMania 12 loss, and time off. He'd signed a 20-year contract.
Yeah.
It was insane to even think that it happened. And then, you know, Vince says, oh, we can't afford to honor the contract. We can't, we don't have the money there. Would it have been and I don't know what Sean's contract status was at the time, but given all the headaches that he was giving allegedly to Vince backstage, you know, with attitude and his issue, personal issues as well, being friends with Hall and Nash, you know, it would have seemed more likely that, hey, you cut Sean loose, let him go to WCW. But was Vince thinking, well, if I do that, then I lose my top guy, mm-hmm. who's best friends with WCW's top guys. Is that going to harm my company more than, you know? And so if that happens, how does it affect WWF? How does it affect Triple H? Because, you know, does he still get the push that he was getting, or did he get the push because of being friends with Sean, mm-hmm. you know, before he started dating Stephanie?
Yeah.
And then how does that affect WCW and the NWO if they bring Sean in and, you know, all the allegations against Hall and Nash, you know, not being company men per mm-hmm. se, where, you know, if you bring in Sean and you add that dynamic backstage,
right?
What does that do to WCW?
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that WCW's fate was going to go the way it went, regardless of who is on camera. So if Sean goes, I think it maybe gives the NWO some new life, because to me, it wouldn't have made any sense for Sean to go over there and not join the NWO. That would be really the only path that would make sense. Bret Hart, I get not necessarily wanting to join forces with them initially, but I think that with their issues were with Turner and the behind the scenes, and whereas, you know, in WWF, it was Vince kind of making all the decisions and the final boss, if you will, versus then all the dilution, the diluting that WCW was having to go through. But anyway, I think, yeah, that if Bret had stayed in WWF, it's an interesting thing to look at, because then also, does he talk Owen out of doing the Blue Blazer stuff? You know, does that not happen? And again, that was a horrible accident. I don't think anybody ever thought in a million years that that could happen. But I do think maybe WCW would have been more competitive with Sean. I think that Sean was in better shape. He was a little bit younger than Bret at the time, and I think that he was more charismatic and dynamic in his role. So I think, but then we lost Sean shortly after that too. So, you know, for 4 years mm-hmm. he was on the shelf. So I don't know. It was almost a good thing that in 98, WWE lost two of its biggest stars from 97 and the years that led up to that, and pretty much wiped the slate clean almost, you know, between Hall, Nash, Sean and Bret all leaving, you know, within a 2 year period, mm-hmm. it gave you that change, because you had no choice. You had to rely on Austin and put more on Kane and the Undertaker, and you're introducing these new characters. And again, like you said, it was, you know, the Attitude Era was revered very well by a lot of fans today, but how much of that was really planned versus how much of that was just we have to react to survive here yeah. and keep moving forward.
Yeah. Well, you know, 2 points. One, if Sean goes to WCW, does he still, you know, take the 4 years off? Because if I remember correctly, the reason he did that was because he injured his back in the coffin match at Royal Rumble 98. Yeah. I guess Joe goes in. So if that match doesn't happen,
yeah.
does Sean stay healthy?
That's a good point.
That, and then also, and this is more, I guess, in the broader scope of wrestling in general, is that, you know, looking at the history of WWF and WWE, they rode the Hulk Hogan co-trains until he left. And then it's like, okay, what do we do now? And that's when Sean and Bret first started to get the push, because there's, you know, Hogan, Savage, Warrior, were all gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said, after Sean and Bret and Hall and Nash leave, then you push Austin and Triple H and Rocky. And so it's like, I think wrestling promotions have a tendency to not really look forward to the future and keep mm-hmm. riding people until it becomes time to push someone new. And then hopefully you've got someone waiting in the wings when I think you should be, be looking at them, you know, sooner. But again, booking is it's very easy to do when you don't have to deal with the actual consequences of your booking.
Right. No, I agree. And I think that we have kind of seen some of that. I think that's part of the reason, going back to the beginning of this conversation with Cody Rhodes, is, you know, Roman was this, you know, untouchable, you know, they had built him up so much. And then I think they kind of in some ways failed as far as bringing in that next guy. And that's why I think part of, and I love Cody Rhodes, but I do think that he is kind of boring. And I don't know that he is,
it's one note.
Yeah. As much as I want this Cody thing to work, to me, it's still, I'm not as extreme in your opinion is on him, but I'm not 100% bought in on him being, you know, it is reminiscent of, you know, when Savage won the championship at WrestleMania 4 and Hogan was still there. And, you know, as long as someone like Roman is around, it's kind of like John Cena had to leave and go away for someone else, I think, to really take root and grow and become that mega star. So I don't feel like, you know, I think Roman is still the mega star of WWE, and Cody is that second tier guy, even though he is the champion and in a lot of ways the face of the company on TV. So,
yeah. Well, and this could be a whole nother topic in itself. It's, I think one of the problems with wrestling booking is separation, where every segment on a show seems to be its own standalone universe. You know, guys don't, you know, back when we started watching, when, you know, like when Hogan won the championship, you saw the guys celebrating with him in the ring. And I think that may be kind of what led to the original Survivor Series, is these guys coming together and acknowledging. But now it's like, you know, you have the Usos and Sami Zayn and Roman against the old bloodline, but Cody doesn't interact with them. Not, you know, now he's dealing with, and I know he did team up at Bad Blood, but since then it's just been Kevin Owens, Randy Orton, Cody. There's no, you know, running into each other backstage per se. And I think that, you know, I think that's something else that I would like to see change in wrestling, is more cohesiveness amongst the roster instead of just being, you know, separated into their own little feuds.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. So I think, you know, and you can only go with the scenario that you know, but I think that with Brett being the screwed person here and going to WWE or WCW,
Brett did screw Brett.
It was best for business, I think. I don't think in the Sean scenario, you know, it, you know, like you said, though, if he goes to WCW, he's less likely to have taken that bump in the casket match at Royal Rumble. So, but with, you know, he had a bad back already. So would something else have aggravated that in WCW?
That, or, you know, and to go, I guess, down the grim road, if he doesn't take that time off. Granted, he did marry a Nitro girl, so that still could have happened.
Yeah.
But if he's on the road, and I know WCW wasn't on the road as much as WWF, but if he's still wrestling for that 4 years, does he does he overcome the demons, let's say?
Right. Or,
you know, as we saw during that period in wrestling, there were a lot of untimely deaths. You know, does something happen? Because if he doesn't take care of the demons, do the demons get him?
Yeah, that's an excellent question too. And then also, if Brett doesn't go to WCW, Goldberg doesn't kick his head off and you know, essentially end his career.
What would Brett be bitter about today?
Oh, I'm sure he would have something. I'm sure.
Yeah, and then also, you know, if Sean goes, how does that affect NXT? Granted, WWF would have bought WCW eventually, and so Sean would have come back. But again, with the, like I said, if Sean isn't in WWF, does Hunter get the push? Do he and Stephanie still get together? Does he become the de facto heir to the company? You know, or could Val Venus be running NXT right now?
Wow. So many mind-blowing scenarios.
Yeah.
I like doing these kind of what-if scenarios and just kind of seeing where it goes. But again, I think that for most parties involved, Bret Hart might argue that, but I think, Austin benefited, Shawn Michaels benefited, Triple H benefited, mm-hmm. Vince McMahon obviously benefited from the way things went, because I don't know that, does he become that evil character going or coming out of Survivor Series without doing what he did to Bret Hart? Because Bret was beloved, even though he was kind of working as a heel at the time, but in Canada, obviously a babyface. But it just, again, it changed the trajectory for so many people. And I think for the most part, for the better. Bret might argue that, but I think we as fans, I enjoyed it. I loved the Austin era. I probably would have done things differently in hindsight, but I think that he is probably the one that benefited, maybe not the most, but definitely benefited. And like you said, Shawn getting that 4-year respite mm-hmm. may have saved his life for all we know. So very interesting scenario. Anything else on your mind today before we wrap up recording?
Well, I guess if we're talking Survivor Series and what ifs, I would say if this doesn't play out the way that it did, we don't get what I consider probably the best Survivor Series of all time, which is Survivor Series 98, which has the Deadly Games tournament, which is probably the best storytelling of the Attitude Era.
Very, very good point. Yeah. The Survivor Series 98 is that interesting one. That's the, because like I've said before, I loved the 4-on-4 or the 5-on-5 elimination matches, but that was the 1 year that it worked not doing that and making that tournament. And probably my favorite tournament in wrestling as well. Because a lot of times I don't think tournaments come off the way that they hope they do or whatever. But yeah, I agree. Again, you were able go ahead.
Which, again, to follow, the what-if scenario, without Survivor Series 98 Deadly Games tournament, Dwayne Gill doesn't come back to WWF, we don't get Gilbert.
Very good point. Very good point. But yeah, I think that match or that night alone, mm-hmm. you were able to build Mankind and Rock and take them to that next level too. And
Shane
that stratosphere. What's that? Who?
Shane McMahon.
Yeah.
Because that's where he turned heel.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. So many great scenarios. and a lot of them revolving around Survivor Series. So let us know in the comments your thoughts. What would have happened had Bret been the one screwed and jumped to WCW? Would things look the way they look today? I can't imagine Triple H and Bret Hart running NXT right now, but who knows? You never know. But yeah, let us know in the comments. And again, you have a couple more days left to make a suggestion for a Survivor Series team. We're going to do that episode next week. And also a reminder to donate to the My123Cents Wrestling Figure Drive. Looking like December 16th is going to be December 15th will be the cutoff for that. And I'll take the toys the week of the 16th and get them to Toys for Tots here in Southern Illinois. Friends, for Chad Smart, I'm Kevin Huntsberger. Thanks for listening and or watching. We will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.